Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're doing a really deep dive into quite an epic tale. We're talking ancient gods, human defiance, and this unlikely hero trying to win freedom. Our source is an excerpt from the novel Am to Özgür İnsan by M. Mehmet Ünver. And our mission really is to navigate the story, pull out the, surprising facts, and get some fresh insights, insights into belief, sacrifice, and that whole human spirit thing when facing just overwhelming odds. So let's start with the main character, Mad. He's set up as the savior figure. What makes him respected, the source says, isn't just that he defies society, it's his independence, right? And this unique knack for returning as a redeemer, defending hopes without giving in.
Right, and that independence gets tested almost immediately and pretty intensely. Mad ends up imprisoned in Abzu. That's God Enki's underground palace. And the description is, well, surreal. No aging, no death, no sun, no moon, just this eternally blue sky. Even his beard stops growing. The text calls it a death-like existence. But the toughest part, profane loneliness.
Wow, that sounds, designed to break someone. How would he even end up there? Was he, targeted specifically?
He absolutely was. Enki took him hostage. It was the condition for releasing the goddess Inanna. And the text makes a point of saying Mad was the first mortal ever to reach Abzu, which really highlights, he's significant right from the get-go, not just some guy.
So trapped, timeless prison, but clearly special. Then something completely unexpected happens, especially given that loneliness.
A reunion.
A very surprising one. Mad's longing for his home, Arj, and he runs into Ram, whom he knew as a male warrior. But, uh-oh, big reveal time.
Okay, what's the reveal?
Ram is actually the goddess Ninhursag. Turns out, as Inanna apparently said, gods are masters at concealing themselves and their truths.
Mm.
And Ninhursag proves it, but what's really amazing is what she does next.
Which is?
She sacrifices herself. She actually enters Mad's body. It's the only way he can use this hidden exit from Abzu and get back to the world. It's quite a statement. Even gods making huge sacrifices. What a way to get out. But he doesn't exactly reappear comfortably, does he? He finds himself back in a dungeon, reconnects with Puga, and learns things have changed a lot.
Mm-hmm. Big changes. Like Inanna. She managed to escape to Uruk. Apparently she tricked a drunken Enki and stole his Mies.
His Mies? What are those?
They're like divine powers or decrees. Really important stuff. And this whole thing, it dramatically raises the stakes for Mad.
How so?
Because Inanna, trusting a mortal, Mad,
mm-hmm.
well, the other gods saw it as a huge insult. So suddenly, Mad isn't just Enki's problem. He's an enemy to all the gods. It kind of shows you how fragile their egos could be, right? Turning on a human just because one goddess trusted him.
That adds a whole new layer. Wow. But amidst all this divine drama, Mad still longs for Arj, his home. The source paints Arj as this peaceful place, different from other temples.
Yeah, a real anomaly. A temple where no one was killed, women and children were treated with respect. Mm. It's a stark contrast to what he'd seen elsewhere. Seems more, humane.
A bit of light in the darkness.
But that light gets overshadowed pretty quickly by a new threat. Marduk. He's the god of Babylon,
mm-hmm.
invisible, omnipresent. And his goal, to be the only god, earth and sky. His method, destroying Sumerian gods and cities by diverting rivers, huge canal projects causing drought, ruin. Mad sees him as way more dangerous than Enki, calls him a cruel god.
Chilling. Divine ambition turning into pure destruction. And that ambition leads us straight to Babylonian slavery, right? Babylon itself, Kadingira, Gate of the Gods, sounds grand.
Looks grand, built to impress, immense power. But the source is clear. Underneath that facade is a brutal reality.
Which plays out in the labor camps.
Exactly. In Sippar, slaves digging those massive canals Marduk wants. These people are criminals or from convert cities like Akkad. And the conditions are just abysmal. Their food, barley porridge and two dates. That's it. Constant hard labor, near starvation.
Just grinding people down. Was it just the work or was the system itself corrupt? Exploitative.
Oh, deeply corrupt. You hear about guys like Miku, a team leader, ex-soldier, vicious, whipping slaves just because. And get this, thieves steal the slaves' blankets, their bowls. They sell them to the team leaders. The leaders sell them to soldiers who then sell them back to the temple. It's this whole cycle, profiting off their misery, keeps everyone poor and powerless.
That's awful. A system designed to crush people at every level. And overseeing it all is Nemrud, Marduk's high priest, and his commander Shamud. Nemrud has this interesting philosophy about control.
Yeah, it's pretty chilling. He thinks fear is useful, sure. But he says a single act of kindness is more meaningful than their freedom.
What does that even mean? Kindness as control.
Exactly. Give a slave one tiny bit of hope, one small kindness, and it's more effective than chains. It creates this psychological dependence, makes them think maybe things aren't totally hopeless within the system, stops them from actually fighting for real freedom. It's manipulation disguised as kindness. Really insidious.
So the odds are just stacked impossibly high. Gods, armies, this brutal system, psychological control. Matt can't fight that head on, so what's his plan?
He goes unconventional. He decides he needs to break the bad magic, that priestly psychological control. And he'll use his own good magic.
Yeah.
His goal isn't military victory. It's to delay the canal construction until spring. That messes up Marduk's war plans. It's a psychological battle.
Okay, good magic. How does he deploy that?
First, connection. He reveals his own past. Tells the slaves he too was branded a slave. That creates instant rapport. Then, the music. He uses his magic reed pipe, the Buludil. He plays melodies that bring joy and morale. It's simple, but powerful. It earns him trust, respect. Key figures like Hako, Shamash, and Kur Dalin, Anshar, start listening to him. It shows that, you know, real influence comes from empathy, from inspiring hope, not just brute force.
And this inspiration leads to some really courageous acts, doesn't it? Like Sidar.
Oh, Sidar. That's intense. He's a warrior from Arj, pretends to be Mad's accomplice, gets himself caught on purpose feigning theft with Mad, just to be sent to the canals. And then he takes the whipping meant for Mad. 40 lashes.
40, does he?
He endures 28 before he dies. It's a profound sacrifice. And it has a huge impact on Mad and the other slaves. It shows the depth of commitment Mad inspires. It really galvanizes people.
Incredible courage. And after that, Mad moves to another phase of his plan. Something about laxatives.
Yeah, it sounds almost comical, but it's deadly serious strategy. Through Kasis, another Arj warrior disguised as a food distributor, he gets Sinemeki, that's Senna, a strong laxative added to the slaves' barley porridge. The idea is to make everyone sick, incapacitate the workforce, delay the canal even more, sabotage from within. Pretty clever, actually, and nonviolent.
Right. So the laxative plot kicks in. What happens?
Immediate results. Slaves get sick, obviously. And then, collectively, they just refuse to work. Open defiance against the overseers, the soldiers. It's a huge step, born directly from Mad's influence in these recent events.
How does Nimrod react to mass refusal?
He cracks down, hard. Enforces round-the-clock shifts. Pushes them to the absolute limit. But, ironically, this just plays into Mad's hand. It breaks their will to comply even further, rather than making them work. Mad understood that, you know. Turn the oppression back on itself.
It's a high-stakes psychological game, and then comes Mad's own public ordeal.
Yes. Nimrod announces he's caught the Argelian savior. Sidar is brought out, whipped again. But then Mad steps forward, reveals he's the one. He tells the slaves, who are furious, not to intervene. He knows it would be a massacre. Then he takes a whipping himself, up to 43 lashes.
43. And he does something else too, right? Something with the pipe.
That's the most amazing part. Throughout the brutal whipping, he keeps playing his magic reed pipe. This act, it just mesmerizes everyone. Nimrod, the soldiers, they're stunned. For the slaves, it's proof. Mad is not just a slave. This is his good magic in its purest form, showing that spirit, hope, defiance, that's real power. It shatters Nimrod's fear-based control.
The ultimate act of breaking the bad magic. And that's the trigger for the escape.
That's the moment. Gutan, another Arj warrior, takes charge. And it begins. A chaotic, desperate stampede for freedom, heading for the Tigris River. But it's not clean. It's messy. People die. Dalin, Hammer, beloved companions, they're lost in the chaos. Freedom has a terrible cost.
A high price. Do they make it?
They get help. Crucial help. The Sumerian army shows up, led by King Kur. They clash with the Babylonians. This huge battle creates the diversion they need. Hundreds of slaves manage to escape during the fighting, heading for Arj. It shows that even the best plans sometimes need, well, a bit of luck or external help to succeed.
What a journey. Mad story. From that underground prison to the canals leading an escape. It's just incredible resilience.
It really is. And what's so compelling, I think, is how the story weaves mythology with these very raw human struggles. Dignity, freedom, Mad's good magic, you realize, wasn't just some hocus pocus. It was his ability to spark hope, to give people agency when they'd been told they had none. The escape succeeds, yes, but at immense cost. It says so much about collective belief, shared purpose. And it leaves you wondering, doesn't it? Who really holds the power? The gods, the priests, or the people who choose whether or not to believe?
That's a powerful question. So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you listening right now? This deep dive into ancient power struggles kind of makes you think, what bad magic exists today? What oppressive beliefs or systems do you see, maybe even in your own life? And what could your good magic look like? How could you inspire change, freedom for yourself or others around you?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the deepest dive isn't just into old stories, but into how those lessons echo in us. Our own capacity for courage, for conviction, definitely something to mull over, isn't it?